Hello and welcome to the PC Perspective Podcast. This is episode 769. It's being recorded on April 17, 2024. I'm Sebastian Peake.
I'm Jeremy Hellstrom.
I'm Josh Walrath.
Coming at you from the network closet once again, I'm Brett Van Sprunberg.
And I'm Kent Burgess.
Rebel scum.
Rebel scum.
Brett, just come out of the closet.
I like it here.
I'm going to start. The networking closet.
The networking closet.
Does that say? It does say rebel scum. It says evil scum. Where's the R?
Oh, there we go. Little rebels.
You can find out how to support PC Perspective by going to patreon.com/PCPer. That's PCPER. And you can be like NKODED.
It's encode to you.
Oh, encoded. Okay.
Encoded.
I see that. A little Josh.
For a minute, I thought it was New Kids on the Block. NKO.
No.
Upgrading to the Josh message level is S. Ogden.
Yes.
What is this spring rolls thing?
Sogden? Sogden. I mean, what kind of name is Sogden? Harukama, I can't understand what is going on with a Haruzumaki. No, is that Japanese with a French accent? That was not good. Haruzumaki. Haruzumaki. Ohayou gozaimasu.
So you are not.
Konnichiwa. Konnichiwa.
Okay, wow. All right, apologies. Any of our Japanese friends?
No, he has no idea.
Listening.
He didn't know.
Konnichiwa is hello, but
Yes. Have you eaten rice today?
You know what? Putting me on this show is abunai.
We're gonna seamlessly transition into our Food with Josh segment, and as you can see here, we're looking at Josh's Twitter feed where he says I could be in trouble. What is this?
I am in trouble.
You got a Brazilian today?
Yeah, I did. I did.
It was before lunch.
It was painful, but you know, in the end, it was worth it.
During lunch.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, I'm a working man. You need to take the time you can. I wish I could do some more lyrics, but I'm out of something. Anyway, no, the Brazilian. This is International Week in a bunch of the restaurants in town. And Born in the Barn had Brazil today. And so they created a special. And this one was a monster and was fantastic. It was a double patty with sharp cheddar cheese, black bean puree, lime crema, house cut shoestring potatoes, over easy egg, all on a sourdough bun. And this was fantastic. Probably one of the better burgers I've had from them in, I don't know, a couple of years. The egg really just, you know, set it off. You crush that yolk and got everything all over there. I mean, yeah, shoestring potatoes, they're fries. Okay. But the black bean puree was super tasty. Cheddar cheese and then that lime crema. Boy.
Oh.
If they kept that on the menu for a while, that would be fantastic. Sourdough. I love sourdough. Who doesn't like sourdough?
I was about to say, don't leave out that sourdough bun. That is like the piece de resistance.
Yeah, no. I was extremely, extremely happy with this special. I'm absolutely stuffed. And obviously, I'm on my 24-hour intermittent fasting because, yeah, I can't eat another bite. But I'll drink beer.
Let's move to the PC Per News Desk, and we'll start with a story about brand new AMD Ryzen processors. They're here, the Ryzen 8000 series, well, the Ryzen AI Pro 8000 series for business.
Pretty much.
So it's not the consumer next-gen Zen 5 product we're waiting for, but
well, I mean,
still.
At least the desktop 8000s went to Phoenix as opposed to the old chiplet, but for the mobile, it's essentially the same damn thing. It's just that Now you got the NPU. It's exciting.
I mean, moving forward in 2024, obviously we have to have as much AI integration and branding as possible.
Which is why only 50% of them have AI. The asterisk there means those are, do not have the enhanced XDNA NPU.
Okay. Yeah, you need that NPU otherwise Snapdragon's, whatever it's called, is going to eat their lunch in those synthetic benchmarks that utilize
NPU. Yes, they will.
Hopefully these bring AMD back to a competitive place in the mobile landscape of NPU-based benchmarking.
Well, I mean, you've got HP quite willing to offer businesses Ryzen-based. You've got Lenovo doing it. Dell kind of dipped their toes in and backed away. I'm trying to think who else gave it a shot, but this might attract them back because now your Copilot has an AMD-powered Copilot. I don't know. I want to be excited about it, but it's...
Yeah, but it's got Microsoft security built in. I mean, how cool is that?
All right. I will give you that.
No, it's terrible.
It makes me so excited that I can't contain myself.
Would that be another low bit rate random number generator? Is that what that means? I've lost track.
Look, I don't know why you guys are not getting more excited about this, because AMD is bringing leading LLM performance with their Ryzen AI. With LM Studio, discover, download, and run local LLMs. That enables enhanced privacy, by the way. Not using Wi-Fi, no fees. Mm-hmm. Bring the LLM to your laptop. All right, enough of this.
Because at 35 watts, your performance is going to be outstanding. As it compared to a G100 running at 600 watts. Yes.
But hey, 4 nanometer.
Yeah, that's true.
Respect that. I respect that.
We need to get to the bottom of a mystery. The mystery of who ASML has shipped their second high-NA EUV litho tool to. Because there is a mysterious second client. And they're not naming names.
So is this when I break out? Wait, what is that quote?
I don't know. Probably should have rehearsed this a little bit.
Frankly,
I don't
give a damn.
No, Clark Gable and... Yeah, gone for the win.
I purposely went wrong.
Maybe not today. Maybe not soon. Not tomorrow. But soon. For the rest of your life. How about that?
Look, I'm about to take this thing out, and if you're not on it, you'll regret it the rest of your life. Wait, that's not the line. So ASML on Wednesday said, I'm quoting the article at Tom's Hardware here, ASML on Wednesday said it had begun to ship its second high-NA EUV lithography system to another customer.
Always true. There are no more, no less.
Come on, they've doubled their customer base in no time at all.
Well, they haven't gone plaid yet, at least.
Such a thing. How many companies in the world can afford one of these high NA? And who's building fabs that could possibly house them?
China?
Intel, TSMC. A mystery.
China. Oh, TSMC. Because Intel was the first customer,
ASML
right?
ASML is allowed to sell to China.
Yeah, but maybe that's why they're not naming the second company.
Wait, no, if they do ASML, what? No, yeah, ASML. But, I mean, they can sell to TSMC because it's not a China-based. I mean, they have fabs in China. But
well, it depends
they could sell it to mainland Taiwan and insert it in the fabs there, or they could ship it to ones they're building in the U.S. once, you know, they have enough clean room constructed. Yeah, they could totally sell to TSMC.
Yeah, they got a good chunk of the CHIPS Act recently. Was it $6 billion? Something like that? Yeah.
A lot of money.
Yeah. Well, unless you're building a fab, in which case it's decent money.
All right, let's raise the energy level of the podcast a little bit with an exciting story. Who doesn't like new GPUs? Who saw it coming last week that NVIDIA would announce new RTX cards? And they would just come out of nowhere. And not only that, but they would be single slot, with a 50-watt power limit. Let's get excited about the all-new RTX A400, which, by the way, if you Google A400, it's auto-corrected to A4000 and you can't find anything, and the RTX A1000. These are both brand new cards with an old GPU core in them. It's GA107. These are not Ada Lovelace. They're Ampere.
Ampere.
Now, you have to remember, as we discussed when they launched, I think it was the A2000, I'm sorry, the RTX 2000 Ada generation, which was not the same as the RTX A2000, that there's this whole concurrent Ada Ampere product lineup with similar names. So you need to be very careful when you're making a purchase. They're getting the architecture that you think you are. But these are still very capable machines. Machines? Very capable graphics cards for display output purposes with a little bit of compute behind them. Although,
not, I mean, 50 watts.
50 watts, yeah.
That's and pretty good.
The amazing thing is that the GA107, the configuration in the A1000 is 2304, and it's cut all the way down to just 768 CUDA cores in the A400, and apparently they're both based on the same chip. That is a significant cut. Interestingly, by the way, I was noticing that these are four mini DisplayPort outputs apiece. If you go over to the...
compete against Matrox.
Yeah, Matrox, that Luma A380, it's got four full-size DisplayPorts, and those are DisplayPort 2.1. These NVIDIA cards, based on an older architecture, it's DisplayPort 1.4A.
That's not good.
And it's a brand new product in 2024. Not sure on pricing on these yet, but yeah, I'm tempted by that Matrox product. If I'm buying a workstation card, I think those are also single slot. This is single slot low profile though, if that makes a difference. Anyway, yeah, single slot, low profile, 50 watts. Get excited.
That's super exciting.
Yes.
Yes. Workstation cards.
Workstation graphics. Okay. That wasn't really very exciting. That was a lie. But this morning, I posted a news post.
Item.
This morning I posted news on an exciting new product.
Where were you sitting at the time? Was it cold?
I would prefer not to answer that. I was using a laptop computer, so I had the flexibility to post from anywhere in the house.
Yeah. We all know.
But this should be the high point of the podcast.
This morning I posted news about a new product from High Point Technologies, actually a new product line. Industry first, we're talking 8-channel PCIe Gen 5 by 16 NVMe switches and RAID cards. RAID cards.
Wow.
Maybe they're not as popular as they once were. Hardware
Maybe
RAID.
They will be again, though.
The Rocket RAID stuff in the past was kind of, you know, CPU based. I mean, they had, you know, a basic controller in there that can do a few things, but it wasn't like, I can't remember the freaking, you know, LSI had, you know, actual controllers in there. There was another group, 3D something. It's been too long. It's been 20 years since I last used one of their products.
3DFX?
No.
Lucid Logix?
But anyway.
Okay, sorry.
What? Lucid Logix?
I don't know.
It's a fabulous semiconductor. But no, I mean, I doubt they have much of a controller in there that will do a lot of the offloading of the RAID functions, just because we have so much CPU power as it is and so many cores and threads that, you know, can be done. But it's going to be looking pretty fast, PCIe 5. I haven't heard of High Point in ages, but they were the go-to back in the day, early 2000s, that if you wanted to RAID stuff up or have another controller on, you know, your AMD platform, because, you know, during that time, VIA was the controller, and they were not great. But if you had an High Point in there and you had the drivers, you had a slightly better performing product than, you know, the built-in VIA stuff. So it's great to see High Point still existing.
Who made those Dell Perk ones? Those Perk RAID cards, who made those? It wasn't High Point, too.
Rush.
I don't remember.
It was Rush.
I would do a Google search, but my keyboard's so loud.
Oh, he's related to Neil Peart.
All right, getting back to the news story, High Point has a new product that's based on a very interesting chip from Broadcom. It's a 48-lane, 48-port PCIe Gen 5 Express Fabric platform. The PEX89048 is what I linked to. And what does this mean? It means that you can put one Gen 5 by 16 card in, say, your slot one CPU connected slot, and have up to 8 Gen 5 SSDs. And this switch is supposed to enable this insane amount of bandwidth. They're talking up to 56 gigabytes per second in storage bandwidth.
It's a lot of gigabytes.
It is.
Who is this for?
People who want that. I mean, think about it. We've talked about Gen 5 drives, Alan, and like, what can you even do with it?
It's for Alan.
Yeah, pretty much.
A lot maybe of people who are database use, perhaps. Look, who,
what if I was editing an 8K movie?
Have you ever tried to edit an 8K video?
No.
No.
I've tried to edit 4K 10-bit. 4K 60 10-bit. Sucks. Because very little hardware out there right now can handle it. Yeah. And
well, have I got something for you?
Yeah. I'm intrigued by this because it's one PCIe card. You can put as many Gen 5 drives in as you want, or Gen 4 drives.
You know, like an Apple M1 or something to do that.
Oh, boy. Jeez. Yeah, yeah. I know. Okay. Apple right. With its hardware encode decode for ProRes and blah, blah, blah. So I just wanted to bring this to people's attention. It's not, there's no price attached to it yet. It's an add-in card. Anyway, what I cared about was the card
okay,
itself.
Here's just what's going on is you okay. only have 16 lanes, right?
Yeah.
That chip acts as a switch because yes. it's got 48 available lanes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's not going to be mapping them one-to-one, you know, the 16 to your CPU. So it has to act as a switch. To do the full 48.
That makes sense.
So that's why it's got that kind of fabric in there because yeah, it's not a 1-to-1 ratio of lanes internal to that versus what needs to communicate with your CPU.
Yes, indeed. It is a switch. It says so right here on the Broadcom website.
And this is why we're developing PCIe 7.0.
Would this have to exist if we just had enough damn PCIe lanes on modern platforms? Why do we have to use a switch on, you know, slot one to get the
because you want to do other things like graphics cards and
right,
networking.
But that's what I'm saying is like, why don't I have like 8 16, you know, lane PCIe
power and traces, man. Have you seen those ATX boards that are massive? And yeah, they've got all of those by 16s, but have you looked at how many layers they are and the traces?
Those
they also have they also have switches on them.
And it has 8 Plex chips on it.
Josh, did you see that picture that Alan dropped into the chat the other day of some massive workstation board? It was that Asus board, the Sage SE.
Yep. Yep.
Those are a lot of a lot of PCIe.
It's a few dollars.
Yeah. Those are not inexpensive. I wonder what he's up to with that.
It's something storage related.
Probably. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. All right. Next news story. This is a little bit of a scandal. It started with a Der Bauer video, I believe, where he was talking about how Ada 64 devs know about Lamptron's devious use of illegal Ada 64 keys. Der Bauer has this video with the word scam in the thumbnail. Lamptron shady business. Apparently the product keys for Ada 64 that they provide with their LCD enabled cooler products, they're fake. They're just using like a key gen and you can't actually register anything. And if you update it, your key is rejected. So that's not good.
Thomas is going to be very upset. He's our guy at Ada, or Final Wire if you prefer.
Yeah.
But no, apparently they've reached out and Lamptron is just like, blah, 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 blah.
Now so, I've got that whole lamp moth meme stuck in my head. If you've seen that
what
one,
is
right?
this, an Ada key?
Yeah, as Al in the YouTube chat is pointing out, the article says that they bought one key. They had registered as a reseller 2 years ago, placed a single order for Ada 64 Extreme. That's it. And ever since then, they've just been using a key gen. I don't know how, if they just, you know, reverse engineered their own key and or what, but yeah. So
from the sounds of it, it wasn't very effective because they got caught and it's not working.
Yeah. Okay, Jeremy, you had posted a news story about Windows 11 coming to Intel 11th gen systems. Wasn't it already possible to run Windows 11 on these 11th gen processors?
I mean, the second that you updated a 21H2, you got blue screens of death, and then you got blue screens of death. And after that, well, you could reinstall it, but you would eventually end up with a blue screen of death. Because Rocket Lake has a specific audio driver that, for whatever reason, caused horrific things to happen when you updated. Because you could slap on Windows 11. It was possible until about a year ago or so. But Intel Smart Sound technology constantly caused crashes. So they pulled it. Microsoft blocked you from being able to upgrade to Windows 11 if you were running Rocket Lake, because they got sick of people complaining. They finally, about not quite two years later, I might be exaggerating a little bit, they managed to find an update to these SST drivers, because I don't know if you've heard, but Windows 10 is going end of life, and it's going to cost you a fair amount to keep getting those security updates. So I think they sort of figured out that, yeah, it might be smart for the businesses which have not upgraded on the cycle that Intel would prefer them to be able to push out Windows 11 to them. So it went from, yes, you could upgrade to Windows 11, but as soon as you hit 21H2, your machine just stopped essentially working, unless you got really lucky, in which case it would work for a little while and stop working. So they finally fixed that. And if you have a Rocket Lake, we'll let you upgrade to Windows 11. Or if you're already running it, you can actually stop blocking Windows Update if you're brave enough. So that is what it was. It's, yes, technically you could have upgraded to Windows 11, but you'd regret it even more than most.
But don't 11th gen owners already have a lot of regret in their life?
Yes.
Finally, a news this week. If you're searching for that RX 6000 series graphics card, the high-end stuff like the 6950 XT, you better hurry to your local Micro Center and take advantage of whatever sales they have on right now, because these are all but extinct.
The amazing thing was is that they dropped the price after the 7000 series came out with all intents to move this out in a relatively short amount of time. How long did this linger? Way too long. Yeah. I think they expected just several months, and here we are, like a year later, still
They also got caught up in the let's order a bunch more wafers because and so they had a tremendous amount of stock.
But so they delayed releasing some of the 7,000 cards because the stock was still out there. So they were really cutting off their nose a little bit on this.
Yeah, but they could instead of canceling orders that had already been done, they could cancel and delay orders that hadn't been done yet once they knew their stock situation. So it wasn't as dire, but you know, a lot of people got 6,000 series cards for relatively inexpensive for what they were for a long time.
Oh gosh, yeah, we were the forefront of the 6950 parade here for about 6 months, I think, where every other week it was a 6950 pick. Kent?
Yeah. Yeah, I was getting ready to say just that exact same thing, that you or I were almost always picking a 6950 XT as the pick of the week because there was one that was unbelievably cheap. But now,
I think, Kent, you recently picked a 6950 XT again, only that one, the box says 7900 GRE, though. But it's the same thing.
Oh, I see what you did there. Clever.
Compare the two. They have almost identical specs and performance, but, you know. And price.
If only you'd bought a $69.50 for hundreds less. Oh, hurts.
I think $599 is fine for that level.
You can. I was actually looking, when I was looking for a pick this week, I looked at the 7900 GRE. There are a couple that are $549.
Kind of like the
they're essentially the same price as the 7800 XT right now.
$6,950.
And a little bit faster.
XT is now, there are more models under $400. Not much, but some.
Finally.
Yeah, it's a good card for that price. But it took a while to get to that price.
You know, it's finally RD&A a great too. Time. It's finally a great time to be a PC gaming enthusiast again. Graphics cards under $400.
Yes, it is.
Processors that pull more power than your graphics card. Yeah, stuff like that. Let's move to security or in security corner. And our first news story.
God, do we have to?
File transfer has gone bad. PuTTY and others spilling private keys.
Yep. This is another of those, hey, you know that secure transfer program you depended on to ensure that whatever you were transferring back and forth remained fairly private or at least didn't lead back to you? Well, the way that the random number generator does the public key for not just PuTTY, but a whole bunch of things like FileZilla, WinSCP, and TortoiseGit and SVN. After 58 public signatures have been posted to your Git comments, or commits, rather, someone can generate your private key. They don't need to have any access to your systems. Literally, just off of your public sigs, they can figure out your private key, because that's not a problem at all.
Now, what would they do with that, Jeremy? What would they do with that?
Imagine. Just whatever they'd like, honestly. Up to and including locking you out of your own after generating a brand new one, which would be a little more difficult, but not impossible. So a lot of you are saying, well, I don't make public Git commits, so I don't have to worry about this. Well, if they get access to your system, they can also do it that way. So it's, if you're not very public with your FTPing, you're relatively safe, but still, is it that hard to update PuTTY? No, it really isn't. So please do. And for all the people behind these programs that we depend on, could you figure out a better way to do a random cryptography signature than what you're doing right now? Because it's not good.
You mispronounced SFTP when you said, or an SCP when you said FTP, by the way.
Yes, I'm sure that I did, because I'm mad about this. It was a good chunk of my Monday. Because how do I uninstall all of them and then push the new ones? Because these are all based off of automatic processes, because that's the nice thing about like WinSCP and those. You can set up automatic processes that will upload data or download data. So you don't ever think about them. And if you have to remove it and install it again, you can break significant chunks of a process. So yeah, it's been wonderful, and I'm so happy that we are making use of these projects. Because, I mean, hey, on the plus side, it is open source software. Security through obscurity sucks, but bad security sucks worse.
You know what else sucks? We were talking about Roku last week and how they have a patent.
Roku sucks.
For, you know, serving you ads over your HDMI port, even if you're not using a streaming service. Well,
perfect.
It just so happens that Roku was hacked. User accounts, 576,000 of them hacked.
Now, in new credential
stuffing attacks.
In describing this, the nature of a credential stuffing attack is that known credential sets, like emails and passwords that have been leaked elsewhere. What happens in a credential stuffing attack is a an attacker will take these paired credential sets and try them in various places, Roku being one of them. Unfortunately, in, I think it was last month, early last month, about 15,000 customers succumbed to the credential stuffing attack. Roku, I don't know if they did much of anything about it at that time, but in the ensuing month between then and now, only about 580,000 more Roku customers have succumbed to the credential stuffing attack. Now, whose fault is it in this case? The fact that you, quote unquote, as a user, reused your credentials or your password from some other place, which is how a credential stuffing attack
Bingo.
Works. Or is it Roku's fault because they're a high profile company that has egg on their face because of this, for allowing you to do so? They can't stop you from doing this sort of thing. This is basically a public service announcement. People, please, for all that is holy, use unique passwords for each individual place that you decide that you're going to plant your profile flag. And so that if that place is compromised, they don't get access to your banking account, to your Roku accounts, and can lock you out of these things and just wreak havoc in your life. Do a little common sense thing here. I know it's tough. Use a password manager. One password is great. I highly recommend it. A couple other ones out there that are.
I'm a Bitwarden guy, but yeah, getting people to use a password manager is difficult.
Yeah. And but key to overcoming this particular problem.
Right, and but then they can't remember their password manager password. Yeah,
but what if I don't write down my password manager password?
Look, and then, it's called one password for a reason. You only remember one password.
Family members I've tried to get onto password managers both lost their master password, and then
recovery key.
No, and then when actually one of them denied that they had ever made the account, even though I remembered helping him do it. And then when they tried to create a new one with the same email address, they said they already had an account, and then they gave up. So
are you saying that there's a class of internet users out there who are just destined to be taken advantage of no matter what? Okay,
absolutely. Right. Because to me, the fact that I log into Bitwarden and I don't even have that many passwords in there, there's like 120 passwords in there, because every single site and account, I use a different login and a completely different password.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So it's normal to me. I just hit the search icon and just start typing and I find the password. And I have to do this every time, and then I have to get my Google Authenticator app on my phone going, and it's a big process to log into stuff for the first time on a new device, but it's more I'm secure sure than
you
everything
will
being the same
succumb
8-digit password.
To this sort of problem. I actually generate unique email address for every place that I actually sign up to, so that I can tell when that company sells my address. I actually use the name of the company in the email address that I make for it.
And having four full names, it's very handy. I can choose which ones I use, and now I know who it was that sold it, RBC.
Exactly.
But I will point out that once again, Randall Monroe has a comic about it, and vulgarity is okay. You're allowed to swear in your passwords.
That's true.
It's memorable to the human brain, and AIs are not comfortable around it. So seriously, go for a memorable phrase with proper capitalization and punctuation.
Yep, and exactly. I hate to say this, fellas, but it's not the complexity, it's the length.
Yeah.
You don't want it to be guessed, just use a longer password.
Whoa. You're saying that length matters more than anything else
I'm
when it comes to my online security?
You don't have to be shaped like a duck. You just need to have it long.
That's correct.
All right, let's move past this topic. Right. Cisco warns of large-scale brute force attacks against VPN services.
Speaking of brute force attacks.
You'll need a shot. I got to go get a shot.
So apparently there's a real rise. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
Talk about this one.
No, I don't want to talk about this. I just want to cry.
So there's a real rise in brute force attacks against a variety of systems. VPNs just being one of them. And this is sort of the corporate side of the attack. It's in the order of many millions. They're doing password stuffing, very similar to the Roku style attack. I think this is a logical offshoot of this, is why just attack Roku and personal environments when you can go after corporate. And the network plunder is just so much better when you're hacking a corporate network, right? Because you can grab their data and do all kinds of crazy stuff with it. So this is not an endorsement. This is just an obvious observation as to why they're doing it. So Cisco is just a VPN vendor of choice out there. They just happen to be a sort of a big target. This is nothing to do necessarily with them. They just happen to have a secure firewall VPN that's used a lot. So they're getting hit by this quite a bit, but they're not the only one. Checkpoint, MikroTik, Fortinet, you know, they're all getting, they're all getting extreme amount of password hacking attempts right now.
And you know what the best part about it is? Oh, it doubles as a DDoS attack.
That's true.
It's very, very true. Because they're not kidding when they're saying millions of login attempts. They're just firing a shotgun. And yeah, even if they don't get in, your poor people that are trying to get onto their VPN are just getting locked out, or a million and one MFA tokens, which is wonderful because there's something called MFA fatigue where you just eventually hit accept to stop it from going. Which is, you know, always a good idea. I highly recommend that if you're constantly being bombarded by strange, are you trying to log into the VPN? Don't hit approve to make it go away. It gets worse.
Yeah, this attack is fanning out and it's hitting, you know, generic SSH services, web applications. Well,
it's been growing for over a month now.
Yeah, and it's growing sizable. They're saying it's coming from many thousands of IP addresses simultaneously, and it's on the order of many millions and millions of attempts on any particular location, you know, practically per second, which, as you say, amounts to a DDoS attack.
Yeah. Murray or someone has gotten bored and one of the botnets is hooked onto this.
Yeah.
Which is great because they won't even know if they got in sometimes, but it doesn't matter. Yeah, it's a lovely week.
Oh, it's not done.
No, it's cap it off. It's not. A 0-day exploit right now in Palo Alto Networks Global Protect Gateways. This is that rarest of
severity score. It's a chef's kiss moment of severity scores, the ones that we like to call legitimately and accurately a 10 out of 10. Because that's actually rated as a 10 out of 10.
I sure picked the wrong week to stop sniffing glue.
Thank you for the airplane reference. So there's something so deliciously slapping in the face of when a security appliance is the one allowing people in via a 0-day 10 out of 10 exploit. There's just, I'm at a loss for words, really. It's just a tough one. So this is remote executable. There was supposed to be a patch a few days ago that was available from Palo Alto Networks for their Global Protect Network Gateway. This is essentially a limited attack right now. They're seeing it almost a single entity is doing this. So while this is a 0-day, it is known. It's not really being heavily exploited at the moment. So to the luck of everybody who's sitting behind one of these, you probably aren't dead yet, but you're in the crosshairs. If you haven't patched, you need to go bug Palo Alto about this particular update. What it is it's allowing a script to run. It opens a remote reverse shell. It pulls in a variety of other funwares and just laterally will traverse the hacker into your network. Bad times.
I am so glad I do not work IT for my company because we use Global Protect Gateways and Cisco VPNs.
Oh, you don't. Boy. You don't. Oh, my gosh.
Boy.
Those guys are having a bad time right now. You might want to make sure that they've got this plugged up. And then that.
Well, we are a mental health provider, so it's perfect.
Let's change gears and go to gaming quick hits. And the first story concerns Fallout 4. Now, there is a massive update coming to this game, which is still very popular, but there's this new Amazon Prime TV show. There's a lot of hype around Fallout these days. So why not update the game
out of the blue?
modern computers, the next gen. Let's see. Ready for your next generation PC, as they put it. It's quoted
so,
here.
So Todd has looted the creation kit to add all of the stuff that the community designed and put it officially now. It's Bethesda's owned. But you get ultra-wide support.
Well, ultra-wide support would be nice. That way you don't have to hack the point of the field of view and all that again, which is always a pain in the ass.
And they decided, again, raped and pillaged from the community. They've introduced the Enclave. There will be a whole new series of quests based around the Enclave, which, I mean, we all like beating up on because they really do suck. As long as you're old enough to remember Fallout 1. But the thing is that this came out of the blue. No one heard about this. Which means that St. George's Day, for anyone who is really looking forward to Fallout London, the Total Conversion mod, guess what? There's a lot of changes to the back end. The way dialogue works, the way a lot of other things work. It won't be out. And they don't know because, as is tradition, Bethesda is not talking to them, so they're going to have to get at the same time we do and see what it does to the mod.
Yeah, and bad
form. I don't
know
if you've ever...
No preview for these guys. That's just bad form.
It's Todd. What do you expect? So the funny thing is that they can't really say what it's going to take to fix it. It could be quick. It could be a while. We don't quite know because there's no way for them to know. It's good news, bad news, because I'm sure that after everyone binged the series, they probably loaded up one of their Fallouts to try it out. Because, I mean, we did all like Fallout. We do all still amuse ourselves with it. But it's just, yeah, that it's perfectly Bethesdian move.
Do you know how many minutes I've actually played any Fallout game?
3.5
10
Probably 30. And 10. that was just to get through the beginning of Fallout 3.
Was it New
so
Vegas?
I can get into the wasteland to use it as a benchmark.
Because this is the problem with hardware reviewers. We lose our soul to this a little bit. But
I mean, honestly, the reviews, the benchmarks you could have done in Fallout 1 and 2 and Tactics wouldn't have been that impressive. 3D isometrics.
Lifted from the television show is an interesting backdrop that fans are just wild about the television show. So they're picking little bits and pieces, little Easter eggs out of it, little new nuances of now what we know is canon, because this is definitely blessed into the canon space. So they grabbed this map during, I think, one of the final episodes. I haven't watched it yet. I'm really excited to sit down and binge it. They pulled a map of where all of the shelters, all of the vaults were. And they have now mapped that onto Google Earth. So you can zoom right into and see what cities the vaults were in or what areas of the country, the U.S. or around the world. You could just map it all over the planet. Very kind of
so you're saying that Pokemon Go was pretty bad, but this is going to be worse because there's going to be a lot of people flocking to
no, Jeremy, what I'm saying is Pal World was a total ripoff is what I'm saying.
I thought Pal World was supposed to be a ripoff of Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. So back to Fallout. So as I was saying about the vaults.
Okay. This is still going on. All right.
I'm sorry. Does this give you whiplash at all? Anyway, it's there's going to be a lot of stuff that's lifted out of the shows. I can just see it happening. This is exciting times for Fallout fans. And every little, nuance that can be pulled out of it will be and extrapolated and laid on to, the lore that it is. In fact, somebody was just had a timeline of where the show actually occurs between all of the games or within the game space. I hadn't read that one yet, but people are very interested in this. It's a good time for Fallout fans.
I tried to get my wife to watch it, and we ended up getting into a fight because it was too violent and gory for her, and she didn't appreciate it. So it was a long weekend on the couch.
Okay.
Is this a true story?
So, yeah. You know?
It sounds true. This sounds true. Yeah. Hmm.
All right. This insight into Josh's married life brought to you by... Yep.
Prozac.
PC Perspective Podcast.
All right. Quickly changing gears. Train Sim World 4. Bundle at Humble Bundle. Top up your timetable. $15. 15 items. Not all games. Probably some DLC in there. It's only a dollar an item. $444 value. Are you kidding?
Sebastian, I just had no idea there was this much train content.
Have you not met Knight Rider in our Discord?
He likes to ride a train.
He does.
Oh,
not that kind of train.
But stop the actual it. Kind of stop
steel,
it.
Steel wheels.
You guys
anyway,
are loco.
If you're into train, I can't. if
this right, so this spins are, is this bundle for people who've always really wanted to be one of those nerds with all the train sets and the miniatures, but they could just never take that complete step?
Can't, or you're
sometimes you don't have space. You know how much space it would take to have a prototypical, you know, even a branch HO line. Scale. Like it depends on what you're doing. If you're N scale, you have a lot more flexibility, but HO,
that's true.
And anything HO's above HO, sizable. Really just forget about it. You got to have a whole like full basement situation.
N scale, you're detailing the figures with magnifying glass.
Some of us have tons and tons of computer cases to store, right, Sebastian?
That's an outrageous.
So that's installation is, it's like R54 up there with all the cases. So how can you blame him?
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, do you want to talk about a LCD? Is this an LCD monitor or a touch screen? What is this?
This is a trans
highly reflective
LCD. That's it. It certainly is.
It's transflective.
The thing is, Josh, that is in direct sunlight. Well, just off a little bit so that you don't get the direct reflection of the sun. The brightness on the backlight is at 30%, because the idea behind this one is that it's got a very minimal backlight to it. It requires almost no power whatsoever. The vast majority of its brightness comes from ambient light, similar to an e-ink device. But the thing with this one is that they've actually, the guy, and at some point, apparently I'm being DDoS too, a young guy named Louis Wang has developed this and literally paid to get it fabbed. And it's on Indiegogo. If that upsets you, then just don't pay attention to the rest of this. To be able to get a monitor that is essentially mostly solar powered. The first one he tried was 100% solar powered. It was essentially an LCD without a backlight, but a reflective surface that stuck out on a small angle and would direct sunlight directly into it. It is amusingly effective at what it does. I will start out with a drawback, because I want to be honest here. The contrast ratio on it is awful, because it can't be good. It doesn't have a strong backlight. It is dependent on light traveling through the screen and being reflected back. It looks essentially like a tablet. There is no OS or anything in it. It comes with two USBs, USB-C on the side, or a micro HDMI. But literally, you take a USB-C, you plug it in. It's now being powered by my phone. This is literally all it's running off of. It is the smartphone. And it is a full, as he tries to, you know, hit it backwards, touchscreen monitor without a problem. But the thing is that the more light you shine at it, the brighter it actually gets.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. I see
so
it.
So you
I
take this outside and your laptop monitor is essentially unlookable. It is so washed out that you can't see a damn thing. This thing, albeit not great contrast ratio, The brightness is brilliant. You can see it, and it's got no tearing. It literally has FreeSync. So it'll maintain 60 hertz and go back and forth. Because as much as I love e-ink devices, super low power consumption, very clear, doesn't care where you are. You get any sort of motion on it, and it blurs. This, not a problem whatsoever. So it is kind of interesting that, you know, you come summertime and you want to work outside, or you want to go camping, or you want to watch YouTube on the beach, this could do it. It's odd.
And look, here it is, completely solar powered.
So I was curious, because once it's got the sun, it never needs to go beyond that 30% maximum backlight. But I was curious, what happens if you throw in a solar charger, you plug it in, and in this case, that's HDMI coming from the laptop. So absolutely no power coming from the laptop whatsoever. But if you plug in your smartphone to it, it'll charge, because that solar charger is providing more wattage than this thing needs. When it's fully exposed to sun, where did I put that? Sorry.
You know, I'm kind of wondering if this isn't based on, so a friend of mine, his wife worked on an artificial retina back in the mid 2000s, 2005, 2006. And it, you know, basically used this kind of reflective rear technology and fabrication. It was really interesting kind of stuff. Still kind of cutting edge. And I'm curious if this isn't based on some of that work. I mean, we may never find out, but boy, if you're on Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever the hell it is, can you ask that question? Because it's kind of neat background stuff.
Well, in that he was 18 when he designed the first one, I don't know that he would have run into that, but I will definitely ask him, because I'm in touch. But yeah, if you're curious, there is no ghosting. Right, you try and do that on e-ink, it is not going to look good at all. But you could literally be watching this outside, and it would be fine. So there is one small problem with small run products that you sort of designed and tried to get fabbed yourself. It's hit Indiegogo today. It is $699. That is somewhat steep for, you know, something that you might not be using a lot of the time. But at the same time, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing if I can work outside this summer, because I can hook this up to the laptop. I don't have to see email at a high contrast. It doesn't matter that much. I don't have to see PowerShell at a high contrast. It doesn't matter. It's a really neat idea. And again, 3 watts at the 30% brightness when it's at full, because if you do feed it power through USB-C, it does give that same brightness from inside. But I mean, it goes all the way up to 10 watts. It's just power hungry. Yeah, it's very interesting. And I don't want to screw around with it because it'll be boring. It's in the review. The OSD is actually quite comprehensive. You can do color changes, FreeSync, HDR. I mean, it's there, but it's crossed out because, well, obviously, not good contrast ratio. You're not going to get HDR. But 16.7 million colors, a relatively decent viewing angle for what it is. I mean, it's very interesting, and I hope that if you can find a way to bring down the production cost so that it's not $700, that would make it certainly a lot more interesting. But as it is, I think this is just sort of a kid. I think he's maybe 22, 23 at this point for his second project, and it's fully funded on Indiegogo. I'm curious to see what's going to come out next. There's some interesting ideas here.
It's time for picks of the week. Josh, please get us started.
Me? Okay. So these mice have just gone down and down in price. And, you know, I'm getting the special edition G502 Hero wired because wireless is crap. Still, I don't know. People who use wireless mice just, I mean, they're so much better than they were 20 years ago, but they still suck. So, yeah, no,
it's the special edition, something like this.
White and black edition. Yeah, I've got that.
Well, it's not the white and black one
too. Yeah, I've got the.
I love this mouse. It's great.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's the way that I do the scroll wheel. But after about two mine's years, dying. Mine died too, and so that's why I had to get this one. And I talked to old Derek Perez.
If I go back to the click, it seems to clean it off and give it a little bit more life. But yeah, I'm inevitably going to need a new one too.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I tried blowing it out with compressed air, and they just stopped scrolling down after a while. Maybe it's all my doom scrolling, my constant doom scrolling in Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's likely it. They didn't figure there'd be that much scrolling. You know what I'm saying?
But they never, did. That's why never did they imagine. A new one.
All right, Jeremy.
So, as if my week wasn't lovely enough, I was presented with something this week that I could not believe. On a Windows Server 2022 install, a Microsoft Copilot app appeared. Microsoft is very much of a, oh, mea culpa. We really didn't mean to. And it is only a mere 8 kilobytes. It's not the full Copilot app. We didn't mean to expose your server to our servers to be able to grab Copilot data. And we promise you that totally didn't upload any data. And, you know, we probably didn't fix this before you even saw it. It was just a totally screwed up MSIX package, which is a whole different discussion. But yeah, Windows Server currently has at least a piece of a Copilot app on it. It's from Edge, which also shouldn't be installed on Server 22 by default, but we won't discuss that at this moment. So Microsoft promises that it's didn't execute any code. It installed on the server, so it executed something. And it's not sharing or uploading or downloading anything whatsoever. And we're very sorry, and we'll probably get rid of it sometime. If you haven't got it, this is an anti-pick. This is just what in the smeg are you thinking?
I'm shocked that Microsoft would install something on their OS that you didn't ask for. Shocked.
Remember when we were going to make the server GUI optional and then that didn't happen? Yeah. So anyways, Brett, do you have something more cheerful?
Well, I could shed a little light on this subject, I guess. Haha. So there I am.
I don't get it.
You will. There I am working in a darkened room. Oh, if only I could just turn on the ceiling light. But it's so harsh. It's so glaring. It's just too much light. If only I had something that was just close to my work surface. But
like the lamp that's directly behind you.
Shh.
Okay.
But my work surface is taken up by so many monitors. What do I do? This product is to the rescue, especially if you're dealing in a curved monitor like so many of you probably should be nowadays. It's a curved light that attaches to your monitor. Oh my gosh. And it even has one of those things that Josh really loves, which is a wireless control. Not wired, wireless for not only intensity, but color temperature. It has backup controls on the device itself. So this is a light that attaches to the, essentially by weight, to the back of your display and has a very sharp cutoff so that it doesn't put any light onto the viewing surface, of the display and only onto the desk in front of your monitor, where you probably have a work surface that you can't see very well.
Well, if you're worried about light falling on your monitor, I have something for you.
So, I'm sorry, Josh, go
ahead. Is it IoT, though? Please tell me
it's not IoT. It is not IoT.
Of course it is. Yes. Oh, please.
It's not IoT.
I like these diagrams. It shows how light is reflected off of objects and into the eyes. See these arrows pointing at the eye area?
That's what those mean.
But this one does not somehow.
That's right. It's magic. Now, if you've never used one of these, they are a bit magical, but they're not perfect. They do have put a little bit of light onto the screen. But
it says it doesn't, though. Look at the arrows.
It's a little bit. It's okay. Pretty good.
Well, but it doesn't put any light in your eyes either. So how does it help?
It does not. It does not. The special thing about this, there is a ton of these available on Amazon or wherever you shop for this sort of stuff. But anyway, this is one of the first ones I found that was designed to be used on a curved monitor and provided a additional hook for the perch that you typically put a webcam on. So they have a ledge for that as well to go on top of the light. Anyway, it's 34% off, so it's normally like $80 or $90. It's $60 right now. So this is the sort of thing you need. It's here.
Okay.
Yeah, everybody run out, buy a curved light from a brand you've never heard of on Amazon for $60.
People like it, though. It's got good reviews.
It gets very good reviews. And you know what? Onway, they probably make good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Color, temperature, and intensity adjustable.
They haven't made it yet, but they're on the way.
Mm-hmm. They're on way. On way.
Kent, okay. Save us, please.
Yeah. Kent, do you have a pick this week?
I do have a pick this week. You know, unfortunately, we're coming out of sort of the golden age of flash memory pricing. The consortium of manufacturers of flash memory have decided that they've been too cheap for a while, and so prices are going up. So if you need storage, get it now. So here is one of the last good deals I could find on a good quality Gen 4 NVMe drive. You can get the 2 terabyte model. This is a silicon power read-write 7,6500, $129.95 for the 2 terabyte, or the 4 terabyte is $209. So it's still close to that good price range that we've had for a while, but it's not going to last. Many of the bigger brands, the prices have gone up over 20% in the last 30 days. So, yeah, like I say, if you need flash storage, get it now.
Yeah. I think I told you that last week.
You probably did.
I wish I didn't have to, but, well, it's going to be a thing. And the RAM, well, look forward to DDR6. It will be very affordable.
Lies.
True.
Actually, I reviewed a Silicon Power Gen 4 drive a year ago, and I was very impressed by how decent the performance was and how ridiculously inexpensive it was. It was $62 for a 1 terabyte drive, which was, you know, we're right in the middle of that era of very affordable storage. But yeah, not surprised that there's a Silicon Power 2 terabyte for $130. This one was what? Phison E21 with a Micron 176 layer TLC.
Yes, it is TLC. So.
All right. Well, I have no pick this week. I was going to pick MPV, but Brett made that my pick last week. So we were talking about it. So check out mpv.io for your high bit rate, high resolution video playback needs.
How could I not make it your pick? You went on a tirade. You went on a bit of a tirade. Yeah, a rant, as it were.
I don't know if I even kept it in the show, but yeah, mpv.io, it's free. It's open source, and it's better than VLC at playing back 10-bit 4K 60 video. I can tell you that from firsthand experience. But that'll do it for this week's PC Perspective Podcast. I want to thank each and every one of you for listening, watching and listening, reading the auto-generated subtitles without listening but still watching, or whatever it is that you do to consume this content that we create. Because we're content creators. And that some people don't like that term. Some content creators don't like that term. But I don't have a better one. We're video makers.
I'm fine with that. Just don't call me an influencer.
Maker. Who you are, though. Look at the shirt you're wearing.
I am not.
You're influencing other people into wearing that shirt. And look at Kent. He's an influencer.
He's rebel scum is where he is.
I'm rebel scum. Kent,
he's wearing a shirt from some low-budget indie movie series.
True.
That's totally not a movie. Nobody remembers it. It's forgotten.
No.
Hey, 47 years ago, this little movie came out. I still think it's good.
Jeez. Don't say 47.
Did you actually do the math on that, Sebastian?
Years ago.